This is Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast, episode number 172. I'm your host, Jan Irvin. This episode is an interview with Freeman, Bert, and Bob, titled The Highwaymen, and is being released on Friday, August 28, 2013. This interview with Bert and Bob was recorded today, August 28, 2013. Please excuse the delay on this episode. Bert and I had recorded this show about 5 days ago, but both of us had our recordings fail. So anyway, we had to re-record the entire show. And in this episode, Bert is back to discuss the highwaymen or highway robbers, those code enforcement officers who use tricks on us and strip our consent for their commerce codes and statutes that don't actually apply to you. In old times, the highwayman was the robber who held you at gunpoint to extort money and goods from you, one of the most heinous crimes and a crime punishable by death. And with Bert today is Bob, who scored a recent victory in California, to tell you how he managed to escape the highwaymen. And what can you do in the face of extortion on the side of the highway? Should you defend your rights right there on the highway or go to the courts? And on the website for this post are definitions and links to follow along with, so please check that out. And let's see, donations. This episode was brought to you by Scott, Lewis, Bob, Sam, Patrick, Ulf, Michelle, Jeremy, Michael, Mirko, Tino, and Deborah. And of course, we do our best to provide everything here for free, so your donations and website purchases are greatly appreciated. The show is run on donations and our website sales. This is not corporate media, but independent media in the truest sense of the words. And by donating or ordering one of the books or a DVD or the She Who Remembers archives, bookmarks, t-shirts, getting a membership to download the older shows, etc., you help to continue this unprogramming. And of course, we greatly appreciate your support. And also, the first 4 years of the Gnostic Media archives are up there on the website, so you don't have to download them all one by one, which takes hours. Anyway, the views expressed by the authors and guests of this unprogram are their own and are not necessarily those held by myself, the host, or Gnostic Media. Check out the website at www.gnosticmedia.com. That's GNOSTICmedia.com. And you can contact me through the contact form on the website or directly at contact@gnosticmedia.com. Thank you for listening and thank you for your support. And here is my interview with Freeman, Bert, and Bob. And this is what, maybe the fourth or fifth time with Bert. Anyway, it's the Highwaymen. Enjoy. So, Bert, welcome back to the Gnostic Media Podcast. What is this, your fourth, fifth, sixth time, something like that?
Something around there.
Something around there. And with us, we have Bob, and we'll just call Bob Bob. And welcome to the show, Bob. And
hello, friends.
Bob, you've been through a recent case, and everybody's already familiar with Bert. So why don't we have you, Bob, introduce a little bit about yourself and, you know, some of your situation.
Yeah, and remember, Bob, try to keep specifics of the case out of the conversation.
Yeah, I'll so keep that, it. I'll keep
make it
generic.
Easier for any editing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I guess I'll just start with you know, how I kind of stumbled on to Jan, who got me stumbled on to Bert, and so on. When I was in my mid 30s, I started kind of investigating our money situation. I was married at the time, and my new wife had quite a lot of debt, and I became very concerned about money very rapidly. So I started looking into basically what our money is all about and how it works and what it is, and all the questions that I'm sure most of your listeners have asked many, many times, Jan. So that led me on a crazy little journey, which led me to various different websites, one of them being yours. And also one of them, the most important for my tale today is 1215.org, which is Bill Thornton's website. And he talked a lot about counterclaims, specifically with tickets, but with other things as well. And you know, as again, your listeners know, Bert's recent interviews also talked about Counterclaim Against a Ticket. And as it happens, shortly before I heard that particular podcast, I had gotten a ticket myself, and I've pretty much always fought tickets. I've never much cared to pay the exorbitant fees that they apparently randomly charge for these acts where nobody is injured and there's no real crime committed. So I've always kind of had a problem with that ever since I was a kid, and I've always fought and had, you know, moderate success with fighting tickets. But you know, of course, it's kind of a rigged game, so you're really just lucky if you can actually win by standing up in traffic court and trying to fight it. It's pretty much a crapshoot. So anyway, based on hearing the podcast with Bert for this particular incident, I decided to see if I could reach out to him and see if he could assist me with doing a counterclaim on this particular incident, and he did.
Bert, so why don't you just kind of give the description of the actual incident happened, again, without being too totally specific, like, you know, don't want anybody to know your age. That's your
yes. Kind of. So okay. I was just pulled over one morning, driving to work, and you know, the officer was polite.
Well, making use of the highway on your way to work.
Making use of the highway on my way to work. Yes, I was making use of the highway on my way to work, and was pulled over by, you know, the usual flashing lights.
You were in a hurry to go to work?
Yeah, I was running a little bit late, as usual, I must admit. So he pulled me over with his flashing lights and, you know, very politely asked for my license and registration, what was my hurry, yada, yada, yada. I just, you know, politely complied, and he sent me on my way. Any other specifics?
So what was the violation?
Oh, the violation was speeding. It was, I think it was 16 miles an hour over the speed limit, which in California now, if you're 15 miles an hour or over, and you, elect to pay for the privilege of traffic school, your ticket's going to be approaching $500. These days, and the court will happily tell you that those aren't their fees. The ticket fee is only $100. It's the state of California that has decided to impose another, you know, approximately $400 in fines
to help pay for the coffee, maybe at the legislature.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you don't expect, you know, those guys to drink Dunkin' Donuts coffee, do you?
Right.
To fill their CAFR investment funds so that
exactly.
They can. You know, cut the cream off the top off their investments down the road there.
Yeah, and so, you know, again, as soon as I hadn't had a ticket in years, and as soon as I realized how much it was, that would definitely sort of harden my resolve to try and tackle this a little bit differently. And
let me just interrupt real quick, you guys. Just a point that I wanted to mention, because you know, one time we were going down the Mexico One. Through Baja California, and my buddy, I don't know why the hell he was doing it, but he was driving 110, and 110 miles per hour, which is about 165 kilometers per hour for Mexico, and we got pulled over by the federales, and they offered us a bribe of, they asked us how much cash we had. We gave them pretty much almost all the cash we had, actually, which was about $60-$80, because we were just going down there for lunch and coming back. And then, you know, the federales were letting us go, and then we complained to them. Or that they were at first going to arrest my friend, but, you know, we gave him $60, complained to him, and we said, well, hey, we were down here for going to lunch, and now you guys have taken all of our lunch money. So they gave us about half our money back and then let us go.
Wow.
Now, you know, I hear all of the horror stories about Mexico and stuff all the time, but I'll tell you what, I would rather pay a cop a bribe on the side of the road any day than deal with the kind of crap that you're talking about right now. I just wanted to point that out. Go ahead.
Yeah, it seems a little more straightforward and honest, at least.
Well, at least you know where the money's going.
Well, yeah, I mean, The cop was like, you know, I have four kids. I got a wife, a family to feed. And I'm like, dude, you know, he's like, we don't get paid squat. I'm like, hey, we totally get it. But, you know, we're down here for lunch. Can you, you know, be cool? And he was like, sure. And he gave us half the money back. I mean, you know,
that's pretty awesome.
We were totally fine with it, and we were totally in the wrong. I mean, we were hauling ass down that highway. So anyway.
All right, then proceed.
So I decided to contact Bert, and he graciously agreed to provide a little assistance in going about this crazy adventure that I was about to set off on. And so where did we start, Bert?
Well, I think the first thing you asked me was, you know, is this something that I could enter a counterclaim into? I think that was your first question.
Yeah. And again, I had been exposed to the idea from mm-hmm. you know, Bill Thornton's website. He's got some great stuff on there. And
right. And then you are asking me, like, well, should I counterclaim the state? Like, who should I counterclaim? And we decided to counterclaim the state and the officer, correct?
Yes.
So on the counterclaim, we listed both the state of California and the officer, right?
Yes. So go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
So you started putting together the paperwork. I had already, I think when I contacted you, I had already filed an extension, which left us some time to deal with it. So you went ahead and put together the...
Okay, well, let me correct you. So I assisted you in preparing your...
Correct.
So this is a learning thing.
We definitely did it together, that's for sure.
Yeah. So I was just simply helping you in some of the formatting and stuff.
Yeah, because that stuff, as we also later learned, is very sort of venue specific.
Yes.
You got to have your paperwork in the proper forms, or they don't want to take it.
Mm-hmm.
So we got the notice of counterclaim put together. Calling out the officer and the state, care of the district attorney.
So what was the basis of your complaint for the counterclaim?
Well, the basis was that I had been, you know, basically arrested and denied my right to travel for however brief a time illegally. Apparently, as you pointed out to me, which I wasn't aware of before, the use of the emergency lights in a non-emergency situation is illegal. And that was kind of a big ding, 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 ding for me. That was a good one. Denying me my right to travel under threat of force. I mean, you know, it's if you look up the definition of highway robbery, that's basically what it is. An armed man stops you and demands something from you. That's highway robbery.
So the actual term is called what? What is the man called?
Highwayman.
Exactly.
Yes, he's a highwayman, which it has an interesting definition in the law dictionaries as well.
Mm-hmm.
And very accurate.
Hold on. Why don't you read that highwayman definition? Do either of you have it in front of you?
I'll get it.
Okay.
So just to describe in a little bit more detail why you felt that you were basically being treated by a highwayman, some of the elements that basically makes him a highwayman.
Well, you know, I mean, you stop under these, you know, emergency lights, you know, that are clearly indicating there's some kind of an issue, you know, so you're obviously first instinct is to stop and figure out what's going on, you know, and that in itself, you know, in my mind creates an emergency situation that wasn't there before. And, you know, he's very, very well armed. He makes it very clear that you know, or they, I should say, it doesn't have to be a he. They make it very clear that they expect full compliance with their demands. And, you know, there's obviously a looming threat there. You know, I think all of us have that sort of initial fear reaction when we see those lights behind us, because now it's a situation that, you know, could go many different ways for us, and we're kind of out of control of the situation at that point.
So there, I just put in the definition of highwayman. I think it's pretty straightforward.
Yes. So, according to Bouvier's, highwayman is a robber on the highway.
And so, let me just read the OED. It says, one who frequents the highway for the purposes of robbing passengers, especially one who does this on horseback, as distinguished from a footpad. So I guess a foot robber was called a footpad.
Yeah. So if he's in a car, what is he, a car pad?
I think he's a cop.
Yeah.
A highway patrolman. So then,
well,
the ingredients...
isn't technically, you would be right, because he's a highway patrol man, right?
Mm-hmm. Patrolling, so he's for victims.
They just insert, he's still a highway man. They just insert the word patrolman or patrol officer, you know, etc.
Yeah.
So he's still the highway man.
Highway patrolman, right?
They just put him in a cute little costume so that, you know, people think he has the right to do it, is all.
Yeah. So some of the ingredients in the, you know, in being a highway robber is that, first of all, you have to stop the traveler, right?
Yep.
That ingredient was absolutely there.
Absolutely.
And he would have to be armed, right?
We got that.
And he would have to basically prevent you from not being stopped. And he was definitely stopping, right?
Yeah, I mean...
And then he would have to want to get something of value from you.
Yes, indeed.
So what was it that he was trying to get of value from you?
Well, and specifically in this instance, my voluntary acquiescence and promise to appear, which is all the ticket really is a promise to appear.
But the end result is to get what from you?
Money, of course.
Yeah.
it's basically extortion under the threat and duress when you're in the court, because you're scared and then they expect you to give up your consent, which Bob didn't do.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's correct.
So here, I want to put this this image here, which is from Wikipedia, of what they used to do to highwaymen in France. You may want to put this with me.
Well, wow, goodness. Well, we will absolutely put that up. And you know, maybe that's where the wheel in the middle there is where the idea of the badge came from.
Who knows? But you describe what that means. They're putting you on the wheel.
Right. Well, of course, I'm just making a joke there, you know, because the
no, but
the
I mean, but what does that mean?
And, well,
but what does that mean?
It's a torture device. Well, oh, I see. It's traveling, and so they're putting him on the wheel to beat him and torture him.
Yeah, but what did the torture involve?
Well, it looks like beating there and...
Hanging?
Hanging.
Actually, when they put you on the wheel, they would try to break as many of your bones as possible before you died.
Wow, how about that?
That's what being put on the wheel meant. And they would break all your bones until you die. Then they just leave you there to die on the wheel. Which basically you would bleed to death internally, right?
Sure.
So it wasn't exactly a fast death.
How about that?
And then some of the other punishments were basically hanging. So they would hang you, and they would usually hang you. I'm trying to see where it was that. I'm not sure if it was on Wikipedia or another place. They would try to hang you in a manner that it would be very well known, so that everybody could see you, that you were hanging.
Highly visible.
Yeah,
right,
highly
on the
visible.
Side of the highway at like a major intersection or junction or something.
Yeah, someplace. I don't know if that was done in England or in another country. But anyway, the point is that highwaymen were killed. Yeah, it says here, the penalty for robbery with violence was hanging, and most notorious highwaymen ended up on the gallows. The chief place of execution for London and Middlesex and Tyburn Tree. Famous highwayman who lives, whose lives ended there included, and they list a bunch of other people.
A bunch of unknowns. Okay. Well, they were hung and never heard from again. I just found an image of a highwayman hanging here, so I'll be sure to include that.
I think we should make it clear that we're not encouraging any such action against police officers.
No, we're not. Point.
We're just pointing out the obvious.
This conversation's taken a dark turn.
Well, yeah. The funny thing is that now it's been turned around. Instead of the highwayman being put on the wheel, they're putting you on the wheel for not doing what the highwayman wants you to do.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Exactly.
That's my main point.
And now we are guilty of, you know, violating their completely arbitrary laws. That, you know, we all have to admit, look, the idea is to make us safer. And in theory, that's great. But in practice, you know, it's a whole different thing. It's not about making anybody safe. They don't show up to prevent things from happening. They're never there beforehand. They're always there to clean up the mess and assess the fines. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's counterproductive at this point, you know, mm-hmm. And I think we need to find a way to sort of rein it back into something that makes sense. I mean, $500 for going 16 miles an hour over the speed limit on an open highway with no traffic. I mean, you know, I've been driving for many, many, many years, 25 years or something like that at this point in my life. I know how to operate my car. I drive that road every day. There was nothing unsafe. And by the way, that's an interesting point. If you look at the statute for a speeding ticket in California, in the California Vehicle Code, the statute that you're written up under for speeding only says that you can drive as fast as conditions allow. You can drive as safe as fast as conditions, you know, are, as it's safe to drive, basically, is what that says. It doesn't say anything about obeying posted speed limits. It doesn't say anything about that stuff. And they leave it, I believe, completely generic like that. So they can say in court that the officer is an expert witness who knows better than you do whether or not you were driving safely, which is complete nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let me highlight a point here. And the original stop, what did the policeman ask you for?
It was a very basic, very short interaction. All he really asked me for was my license and registration. And then he said that he clocked me going 61 and a 45. And wanted to know what my hurry was, and that was it.
So the point that we want to highlight is that at that point, when he asked you for a driver's license, he was asking to see if you had a license privilege to operate basically on his highway, right?
Yes.
Because, I mean, a license is – what's the definition of a license?
A license – I don't have the exact definition, but if you look it up in the law dictionaries, it's actually an instrument of commerce. It's a license to, I think, specifically carry passengers for a fee. It's basically the equivalent of you being a taxi cab driver.
Yeah, so basically it's a permission from some authority to do something within their authority – that without it would be unlawful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the best example to use about licenses is marriage. People stupidly go, and I mean, I did it. I did it too. People stupidly go to the state. Hey, can I get married? And the state says, "Well, let me think about it. Go get a blood test and let's see if you guys are not related.
Give us some money."
Oh, yeah. Well, we came back and see we're not related. I mean, we're just distant cousins, but we're not that close. Okay, we'll let you get married. Okay, come go to one of our judges and bring your license and we'll give you permission to get married. So the question is, do we need a license? Is it unlawful for you to fall in love with someone and marry them? Of course not. You know, and if you actually trace back, and Dr. Tom did this, he traced back the history of what a marriage license was, and he actually goes back to the freed slaves.
Wow. Yeah, maybe I should get a hold of Tom and have him do another show, and we can do that. You know, Bert, I wanted to go back real quick before we forget and remind the listeners and those who haven't heard it yet about speed limit signs versus caution signs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'll let Bob talk about it. Go ahead, Bert.
Well, you know, if you notice, this is the same thing that you and Tom talked about on the previous podcast, you know, that the quote unquote speed limit signs that are posted don't actually indicate a rate of speed. And this was one of the points noted in my counterclaim. You know, 55 what? 55 inches per second, you know, 55 light years. I don't know. What does that mean? And, you know, The interesting thing is that when you look at the warning signs that are there for actual purposes of keeping you safe because there's a dangerous situation coming up, such as a tight corner that requires you to slow down if you're going to take it properly, you know, those actually post MPH. They say, you know, 30 miles per hour. And that difference is pretty interesting. And you know, it seems that, you know, they are under obligation to warn you when you're entering a potentially unsafe condition versus just normally traveling down the road. And Bert, you had an idea for why they leave the actual speed limit signs without a unit of measure. What was that point?
Well, and the point is because those white signs are designed for commercial drivers. Okay, and the commercial driver is the one that's supposed to identify the speed because he's operating under a license that tells him what that speed should be.
Yes.
So if the speed is not posted under, it's because that sign is not for you.
Yeah. And interestingly, I want to point out also that all of the terms that we talk about when we talk about, operating our vehicles on the highway or, you know, whatever speak you want to put it to, you know, when you're in court, all the terms that they use, they all have very specific meanings. And most of us are completely ignorant to those meanings. I know that I was, I'm probably still ignorant to a lot of them, but I know a few of the key ones, again, such as the driver's license being, a license to actually operate in commerce, which I'm not doing when I'm driving my car. The word traffic specifically relates to acting in commerce. The word driver specifically relates to acting in commerce. If you look these up in Black's Law, the definitions are very clear in legal terms.
And so when you think about them catching someone in a traffic stop, then that's all admitted trickery that they use to get someone.
Exactly. And you agree that you're operating under those conditions by giving them your driver's license and going along with the whole thing. And if you don't stop and say, wait a minute, I'm not operating in commerce here. You have no authority over me. Then they're going to proceed and they're going to skin you. And they operate and exist because all of us are ignorant to the fact that we can simply stop and say, no, this doesn't apply to me. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, I mean, in this particular situation, you know, I was not engaging my plumber's license. I was just simply fixing the drain for my friend.
Yeah.
In this particular moment, I was not exercising my license as a doctor. I was just putting a Band-Aid on my son.
Yes.
I mean, it's the same point.
Yes. Now, if you're a courier or something like that, and you're driving your car to make money, or you're a taxi driver or an ambulance driver, you know, clearly you are operating in commerce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is an interesting counterpoint because, you know, I mean, how many times do we see, highway patrol or other police officers, you know, driving like mad without their lights on, you know, speeding crazy down the highway? They're breaking the law in that instance. They're clearly breaking the law because those laws apply to them. They're operating in commerce.
And, you know, speaking of, about 3 days ago, I was driving up the highway here, and sure enough, some CHP...
Okay, if you were driving up the highway, then you deserve to get a ticket.
Right. But this CHP was, and it's a two-lane... The CHP was going the opposite direction. It's a two-lane highway. He was doing about 80 or 90 in a roughly, you know, typically 40-45 area. And with his lights on, and actually shoved me off into the dirt, you know, flying around, you know, because we're up in the mountains. So he comes around this corner, shoves me over into the dirt, and goes flying by. And I actually, you know, I did flip him off, but that was about the extent of it.
Okay, but let's go back. So so if you had gotten a ticket in that particular moment, would it have been justified?
Are you saying me?
Yeah.
Well, he was the one doing 80-90. I was just driving up the highway. He was going the opposite direction and pushed me over into the dirt, you know, for some...
So what I'm getting at is that you're using the word driving up the...
Yes. You
so
got
if you're
me.
Driving, boom, boom, boom. If you're driving, you are operating in commerce.
My bad, yes. I was traveling...
Actually, you were making use of the highway.
I was making use of the highway in my horseless carriage. And this highway man almost ran me off the road, you know, and I had to dodge him, and he had his lights going and everything, but he, you know, almost hit, actually, you know, he pushed three cars off the road flying through. Anyway, the point was, you know, he was, you know, acting, had his lights on going somewhere and almost causing all of this havoc while trying to go to, you know, report the fines for another incident.
I mean, talk about creating a dangerous situation.
Yeah, and well, I mean, if you wanted to follow him and see if, in fact, he was in a real emergency or if he was just late for
donuts.
For the fresh donuts, then, you know, you would have had actually a case against him, which cops do all the time. They put on their lights just to hurry up and get across the intersections, and then they turn them off.
Right. Yeah, you know, and of course I've seen that. And you know what? We should one day here soon maybe do a show on surveillance. And, you know, talk about people getting cameras. And nowadays you can get HD cameras that you can keep on your keychain or on your dashboard for around $40.
Mm-hmm.
So
I just
anyway.
Put in the definition of highway here. This is from Bouvier's dictionary, and everybody needs to become familiar with this dictionary because this is, from my understanding so far, the only dictionary that was actually put together by order of Congress. So it's actually a congressional approved dictionary as opposed to like Black's Law. So these definitions are solid in court, in any court, because it's from
the now some because of its age. I mean, this was what, 1850s that Bouvier's?
1856.
Yeah. So some of it obviously doesn't exist in our...
Yeah, but that's all. Oh, yeah. So anyway, why don't you guys read through that definition? I'm going to put you the other definition that's
well,
really...
Well, sure. It says, you know, highway is a passage or road through the country or some parts of it for the use of people. And see, Institution 442, the term highway is said to be a generic name for all kinds of public ways. Two, highways are universally laid out by public authority and repaired at public expense by the direction of law. And then three, the public have an easement over a highway of which the owner of the land cannot deprive them, but the soil and freehold still remain in the owner, and he may use the land above and below consistently with the easement. He made... Oh, wow. So this is really interesting.
It's basically saying you have the right to pass through any land that has a highway on it. That's,
well, but is it not also saying that, you know, when they do this, when they take land for public use, that the original owner always has still use above and below that, even though they take the easement?
Yeah.
You know, so what, you know, this public domain stuff, when they, you know, when the eminent domain, when
eminent
they take
domain.
Land, they're not telling these people that the people have the right above and below to keep that property, even if it's used for eminent domain like a highway, and that they have constant use of it. So if they take a building for a mall, does then the owner of that or the former owner get stores, get, you know, what's the, boy, interesting stuff here.
Well, but see, here's a really interesting point about a highway. Highways were always something that was in that people of a particular location encouraged. You know, if you and your friends, you know, start gathering in a place and you guys create a town, isn't it to your advantage to have a highway going in and out of your town?
Of course, sure. It benefits everyone.
It benefits everybody. So really, the owners on each side of the highway actually own the highway.
Yeah,
see, people don't know that.
And it says the owners of the lots on opposite sides of the highway are prima facie owners.
Yes.
On each of one half of the highway. And
yes.
Yeah, wow. So that's really interesting. And the owner may recover
amazing.
Possession in injectment and have it delivered to him, subject to the public easement. So,
yeah.
Wow.
And if you want to confirm this, go to the county, like building permits or wherever they have, the plots for the lots. You will notice that your lot actually extends to the center of the highway. And you are giving easement 40 feet of that easement. You're actually giving it up for the highway.
Wow.
But your lot technically, and I didn't find this out. I found that out by accident when I was doing work as a contractor in the mountains, doing some jobs. And when I was pulling up all the information on this lots, I'm like, well, holy moly, look, your property actually goes all the way to here, to the middle of the road. And the guy's like, oh, wow, yeah, I guess it does. You know?
Yeah.
So it's really important that we understand this. And when I gave this information to, Tom, he started double-checking it in Virginia, and he was kind of impressed with that fact. He's like, oh, my God, so that highway is actually mine. I'm like, yes, it is. Now, let me put another definition here that actually hasn't changed. You get it?
Yeah,
I got it.
I'm just trying to figure out where it starts here. Okay, let's see. Driver, one employed in conducting a coach, carriage, wagon, or other vehicle with horses, mules, or animals. That one says conducting there, though. But two, frequent accidents occur in consequence of the neglect or want of skill of drivers of public stage coaches for which the employers are responsible. What were you going to say?
I think the key word in that first phrase there
is employed.
Employed in conducting.
Yeah, you're right. Of course. I missed that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when you're in your own car going down the road, are you who's employing you? You or who? Who's employing you?
Nobody.
Nobody's employing me.
Nobody. So you're not an employer.
Are we allowed to use the word car, or is it then a, you know, what do we call it to escape their verbiage?
You know, it's they have basically kidnapped the entire language. You know,
it's word magic.
Any word that you say means something else.
Sure.
So
you have to go through and define it and use their definitions. I'm saying right here, driver means this, and then say one employed. So then you are defining the word in your counterclaim.
Correct. And this, these definitions are only, at least to my thinking, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but to my thinking, these are only relevant when you're dealing with legal matters. I mean, you know, you and I can have a conversation about driving my car, and you and I know what we're talking about because that's a commonly understood definition of that word is, you know.
Right. And of course, the sophist is always
definition.
And the sophist is always going to work the equivocation as far as they can.
As long as we understand the difference.
Right,
that's the important part.
Yeah, and you know, the point is that
as long as we comprehend the difference, sorry.
Yeah, so in contract law, or pretty much in any kind of negotiations, he who controls the language pretty much controls the contract, doesn't
he?
So if you're entering into a legal contract and you don't understand the language, you are at a huge disadvantage.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I tell people, it's like, stop entering into contracts with the state. It's never in your advantage. Never.
Yeah.
You know, so the point about, you know, we're kind of getting into, we're still working on the same subject, but getting back to what we were originally talking about. So you got pulled over, and he asked you for your driver's license, registration. Did he ask you for proof of insurance?
Yes.
Okay, so those are the three things that they always ask for. And, of course, he was armed. You had no desire of losing your life at that moment. So you gave all those things. No different than any other armed guy asking you for your wallet.
Yeah.
You know, and that was one of the points that you made in your counterclaim.
Absolutely.
That you were under threat and you did whatever he wanted you to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, let's face it. If I was in a hurry for work and you know, that was a tow truck driving behind me with his lights flashing, you know, I'm probably going to flip the guy the bird out the window and keep speeding along my merry way to get my ass to work, you know. But because, you know, because we know what those blue and red lights mean, you know, we're all conditioned to again, have that fear reaction and you know, instantly have that guilty feeling of, uh-oh, we've done something wrong and now we have to pay for it.
Well, and you know, the thing about the emergency light, that's actually a courtesy thing that it's a thing of the road. Like, for example, if you're on the highway and you see someone on the side of the road that could use your help, I mean, you're somewhat expected to stop and help.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and in the city is something that you know, you're among the most people you could possibly be in, and you have the less likelihood of someone stopping to help you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I lived in the mountains in the country, I mean, I had one time I had a flat, and I mean, I wish I had a sign that I could put to say, please don't stop. I'm okay. I mean, every car that came by stopped to see if I needed help.
You know, let me ask you this, Bert. What do you think, you know, we should do? You know, like recently this guy on your rights when you get pulled over that was on Alex Jones maybe 6 months ago, you know, talking about maintaining these rights against these highwaymen or highway robbers on the side of the road versus, you know, not dealing with the psychopath in the costume there on the side of the road who's got the gun and whatnot. You know, or, you know, is it best to hold your rights there, or is it best to just, you know, let that guy slide and deal with it at the court? Or do we do it in both instances? What do we do here?
Well, what would be your recommendations, Bob?
Well, certainly the safest route, I think, you know, quietly comply with his demands, as Tom illustrated in the previous podcast that you guys did. You know, he's got a gun, and you know, there's a very real danger there.
Well, but he's going to have he's going to have a gun in the court too.
Yeah, but you're isolated when you're pulled over on the highway. You know,
right? And then he's got all the witnesses
it's basically a private, you know, event between the two of you, unless you have a passenger in the car. You know, it's I think, you know,
correction.
What?
Your passenger's paying you?
no, they're not.
You have a rider.
Yeah, okay.
Gotcha. People, stop using drivers, stop using passengers, stop using vehicle, stop using person,
stop using traffic.
That's why it's best.
Stop using marijuana, stop using firearm, etc.
Yeah, I mean, what is the safest route to take with these people? To keep your mouth closed.
Yeah.
Because anything you say can and will be twisted against you.
Yeah. Now, Bert and I had a separate conversation about this, and you know, you had said, Bert, that I believe what your method is, if you get pulled over, is you will collect those you know, documents that we know we have to turn over, the driver's license, the proof of insurance, and the registration, and you'll put them on your dashboard,
and
basically explain to the officer that you know, if you're not going to answer his questions, and that you believe that the papers he's looking for are on the dashboard, and if he believes he has the right to trespass against you, he can take them. Otherwise, you know, you're not going to say anything.
You're not going to voluntarily give it to him.
Not going to voluntarily give it to him. And
yeah, and then that way you're not refusing.
And you're acknowledging that by him reaching into your car and taking those documents, he's trespassing against you. willfully.
And this is a good place where surveillance is really needed, because we need to, again, have cameras in our pockets all the times, and not just your cell phone, but something that you can just hit record really quickly and have video of it all in case they try and claim otherwise or whatever.
Yeah, and I really believe, and I'm in the process of trying to set that up in my on my horseless machine, a mode of using the highway. So you don't even know what the hell to describe it,
here's the thing is, we just kind of just thoughtlessly use these words because we're used to using them in conversation with each other, but mm-hmm. we actually have to stop that and get used to using these other terms in normal conversations so that we don't slip up in front mm-hmm. of these highwaymen. And when I say highwaymen, I'm not talking about Johnny Cash and
I was a highwayman.
It's interesting. I don't remember where I heard it, but I heard another interview somewhere with someone who was basically making the assertion that the English language specifically, we tend to think it sort of developed organically out of normal situations. But I wish I could remember where I heard this, but it was a while ago. And basically, this person was making the claim that the English language was actually specifically created to be this way, and sort of a dumbed down version of the languages that it was derived from,
French and German, etc.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It is. The English language is terrible. I mean, it's like I tell people, like, if you were to learn Spanish, you would really appreciate poetry, because there are more than one word for most things. And there's many ways to say the same thing.
And many ways to spell it. What's interesting is, I lived in Yugoslavia for a while, and they actually have two alphabets, one Cyrillic, one Latin. They use them interchangeably, but you cannot misspell a word in Serbo-Croatian. There's only one way to spell it. So if you can say the word, you can actually spell it.
Wow.
Yeah, and they have no concept of spelling bees. It's like the most absurd thing they've ever heard of.
Yeah, same thing in Spanish. In Spanish, there's just a few minor variations.
Well, in Serbo-Croatian, there are none. They have changes on the word endings, etc., but they have no words that have different meanings.
Yeah, so that's why.
Words that have different spellings. Sorry.
Yeah, so but that's why when you're communicating legally, especially with these courts, it's important to define crucial words whenever possible, so that no one miscomprehends what you are saying. But anyway, so moving on. So after he decided to enter his counterclaim, what was the first step that you did with your counterclaim once you had it in your hand?
Well, we drafted up the notice of counterclaim, which was just saying, "Hey, heads up, people, I'm not going to lie down for this one." So I took that and first went and attempted to, file it with the DA's office, and got a very, very interesting sort of runaround with trying to get this. Initially, I was trying to get it stamped and a copy of that stamped thing returned to me, so I could then take that to the court and file that with the court where the traffic incident was to be heard. And just really got the runaround, got sent to several different locations, was finally, given to someone who told me that, the DA wouldn't be handling this case. They had no interest in this case. They couldn't do anything about it. They weren't going to represent the officer. They didn't have anything to do with this. That if I had a problem with an officer, I needed to go to the Board of Supervisors down the street and take it up with them, yada, 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 yada. And so I was kind of at a loss in my ignorance in this operating in this realm of legalese. So I kind of frustratedly, left and got on the phone with Bert, and Bert was like, "Well, just go back in there and
Well, you had at one point you had gone to a different courthouse as well, hadn't you?
Yeah, that's a little bit later on.
Okay, excuse me.
In this instance, the first action was just trying to get it, you know, get the paperwork, get the DA on notice that, you know, I was, you know, basically coming after them. And so I called Bert and I was like, Bert, man, I don't know what to do. They're not taking this. He was like, look, just go back in there and if they won't take it from you, just make sure that they see you put it down somewhere and tell them that they've been served. And so I, you know, of course I'm nervous because I'm, you know, the whole thing is very intimidating. I mean, that office, that building is like a fortress, you know, and it's just a real creepy air in that whole thing. It's just weird and, you know, very unnerving. So, you know, I get up my gumption and I go back, and luckily for me, not so much for this poor girl, the previous girl who was there, who had taken the paperwork, the receptionist, who wouldn't take my paperwork and had sort of, you know, brushed me off onto someone else. That girl had gone on break, so there was a new girl there who hadn't seen me, and I sort of made a pretense of asking for her help and got her to sort of move aside. She's behind this big acrylic window with only a little pass-through slot, and that's barred off, and so they obviously don't want people doing what I was trying to do. And so I kind of, you know, made like I was asking for her help and got her to move the thing, and I slid the paperwork under there, and she looked at it and her eyes kind of got real big, and she was like, oh no, I can't take this. I said, okay, thank you very much. You've been served. And I walked out. I hope she didn't get in too much trouble.
Yeah. So, but, you know, sometimes you have to use their own tactic, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's pretty ridiculous, you know, because I then took that, you know, over to the courthouse. And the lady at the courthouse was, you know, I finally got, you know, again, I had to deal with a couple of different clerks, and they were all, you know, various degrees of annoyed with me and baffled by what I was trying to do. And, you know, I kept saying, I want to record this into the record. And she kept saying, there is no record. You know, I can file this for you. I finally got her to say, she's like, I can file this and put it in the case if you want. And I was like, well, okay, you know, whatever we need to do here. And, you know, she was funny because she had looked at the paperwork and she was like, I've been doing this for 30 years, sir, and I've never seen anything like this. I have no idea what you're doing here. And I said, well, I you know, I understand it's an unorthodox approach, but, you know, any help you can offer me in getting this done correctly would be greatly appreciated. And she was actually, you know, she was actually fairly nice and actually chased me down at one point because I had forgot to actually, you know, set a date, which I had to do by that particular date. I had to set a date for an arraignment. And so she actually chased me down after I left the building and you know, offered some more assistance. And then I asked her, I said, so out of curiosity, you know, would the DA be involved in this case? You know, would they be representing the officer in this case? And she said, absolutely, the DA would be involved in representing the officer. So the whoever the person was at the DA's office, you know, flat out lied to me about, you know, their role in this whole thing, which is, you know, when I walked away from that and I called Bert, I was pretty angry about that. I was like, you know, these people are public servants and they're there to, you know, facilitate, you know, public needs, and they're not doing their jobs. In fact, they're doing the opposite of their jobs. They're not helping the people. And you know, the whole idea of this whole thin blue line where everybody sort of comes together and you know, protects each other is very much real. And I've very much seen that in this whole thing. And it's been pretty frighteningly disconcerting, I have to say.
Yeah, and I mean, and these people will lie. Mm-hmm. I mean, the people that you can definitely expect to lie to you is the closer you get to an attorney's office, the higher the degree of lies.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're inside an attorney's office, or when you're actually talking to an attorney, expect to be lied to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the way it is. Because these people will lie, I mean, completely. I mean, in this other case that I'm dealing, this attorney had the nerve to get up and speak to another magistrate and completely lie and say that this guy has a Facebook account where he talks about all this other nonsense. And this guy has never even had one.
Hmm.
I mean, just a straight out lie, not to mention all the other lies that they conducted in open court. But, oh, it's just, I mean, I'm just I have lost whatever little respect I may have had before for attorneys.
Yeah, it's pretty astonishing.
Yeah. So anyway, then from there, you attempted to enter this into the record of another county because you didn't want the conflict of interest of attempting to access the court of record in this particular county. And what was some of the obstacles you ran into at the other?
I think it's a good idea to point out for people that at this point there are two separate actions going on. There's the ticket, which still has all of its associated, legal ramifications, a trial that's coming up. I've now set a date for an arraignment, which I have to go to, which I'm supposed to enter a plea guilty or not guilty. And then if you go not guilty, then you get a traffic trial for the ticket. And separate from that is the counterclaim against the officer, which is a separate action. And the hope is that when the officer gets notice of the counterclaim, he's not going to show up for the traffic ticket trial because any testimony that he gives as a witness in that ticket matter is now evidence to be used against him in the separate civil action that is a counterclaim. So that's, the idea is to dissuade him from, showing up to the traffic matter, which then by default it's dismissed. So to what Bert was saying, we wanted to get the counterclaim filed, in a, county where the Superior Court has an actual court clerk. And this goes back to Bert's, I think, first podcast with you, Jan, discussing the difference between the court clerk and the clerk of the court, getting back to that, word nonsense. It's two things that sound the same but are not. The court clerk actually being a very important officer in that court, as you said in the previous podcast, Bert, more important even than the judges. And they're sort of the ultimate authority in the court. We found out that almost none of the counties in my area, only one actually, have a court clerk. They all have what they call, what was it, Bert? Executive administrators.
Yeah.
And the whole reason for this is the whole reason for wanting to get a court clerk is because the court clerk can enter a default judgment. And help me out with this, Bert. I'm a little sketchy on the details, but the idea is that the officer may not respond to the counterclaim, and if that's the case, then his lack of response would be then you can demand that the court clerk enter a default judgment on your behalf, correct?
Yeah. So that's what you do. You enter your civil action into that particular court, and if no one shows up to answer the action, then according to their own rules, after 30 days or 35 days, you can then go back to the same court and ask for a default judgment, because by your opponent not answering, they're agreeing with your action.
Now, in the case of Riverside County, what they had done was claimed when the default judgment was entered, they had claimed that, the court clerk can't do that. It has to go before a judge.
Yeah, and that's actually not true, but that's why there's a lot of traps that they put in your way. And one of the traps is paying to access the court, which is against their own rules. You're not supposed to sell justice. And when you have to pay to access a court that is fully funded by the body politic, by the state, then they're getting you to buy an additional service, and they don't tell you what that service is. And I'm still not 100% clear on this because I'm in the process of actually getting ready to sue a court clerk. when they get you to pay these fees, they want you to pay for these fees unconditionally. You can ask for a bill, you can ask for an invoice, and they will not give you one. They just want you to take your money, close your eyes, put it on the table, and then they take it. Almost like an under-the-table transaction. All they give you is a receipt, but they never give you a bill or invoice ahead of time, which makes it a donation, or makes it a donation for a separate type of service. So they're kind of getting you to buy something that you never went there to buy. Okay, right. And I already gone around and around with one of my court clerks here where I'm at, and I said, well, okay, I'll pay you the money. Just give me an invoice or a bill saying what it is that I am buying with this money that you want from me. That's all I wanted. I was willing to pay it, and I'm still willing to pay it. But they're like, oh, I can't do that. I'm like, well, how can I just give you money? Well, you'll get a receipt. I'm like, well, is the receipt going to tell me what I get? And she's like, can you print out a receipt so that we can show him? Oh, you're right. The receipt doesn't say anything. I'm like, yes, I know. A receipt is just a receipt that you receive something from me. That's afterwards. You have to give me something ahead of time.
I want an itemized list of what services you're providing
me.
What am
I paying for? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so they're refusing to give that. So then, I mean, you could even probably sue them for not providing an itemized list, couldn't you?
Well, so that's what I'm in the process of doing, but that's what they do all across, you know, the whole entire States United. These courts are actually engaged in fraud, and
well,
people don't realize it.
Doesn't this get back to the commerce thing, Bert? Because the idea is that they want to trick you to once again operating in commerce, because those fees are there. Correct me if I'm wrong. The attorneys that work for the court have to pay a fee to the court to use the court, because they're operating in commerce. That's how they make their living.
Exactly. And see, that's the thing, is that attorneys are licensed, right?
Yes.
So they cannot practice law because practicing law without a license would be unlawful. So you obviously don't have a license. So when you go to court and try to act on your own behalf, what do they call that you're acting as?
Pro se.
Pro se. What's the meaning of pro se? That you're acting as an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So they're granting you permission to act as an attorney, but you have to pay for that privilege to act as an attorney. So that's what they're trying to get you to do, trying to get you to act commercially. So now when you enter the court as pro se, guess what? The whole Constitution, the whole everything that is common law just went out the window.
Mm-hmm.
Now the only thing that matters is statutory law, because mm-hmm. that's all commercial. And then people wonder, well, why is the Constitution irrelevant here when I'm not acting, you know, as an attorney? I'm actually wanting to access the Constitution. But from the very beginning, they're telling you you're acting as an attorney.
You basically contracted to operate under the statutes and codes that apply to that situation.
Exactly.
Whether you know it or not.
Yeah. So one point that people may want to highlight when they are being offered the position of being pro se, you can ask, well, by me acting pro se, what rights am I giving up?
Mm-hmm.
Will they
tell you though?
Well, they probably won't. But you know, that's why you want to enter all of this stuff in black and white. Like for example, I had this one fellow that I'm helping. They were offering him the position of going pro se, and he made it clear to the magistrate. He says, "Well, I will be willing to accept this from you if you give me the same benefit that this other feller has got over here, because an attorney cannot be a surety for his client."
Mm-hmm.
So he said, if I'm an attorney, then I also want that surety so that I cannot go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, we can't do that, sir. So they're willing to give you partly the benefit of an attorney, but not completely.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see how they put you at a disadvantage before you ever begin.
Yeah.
So he's well, just,
the terminology is interesting too, and you know the definition of the word person, and you know when you hire an attorney, he's representing you, and you know that's an interesting, you know, I think we take a lot of common words and don't think about them in their proper context, but you know you're being represented, which basically means, if I understand the idea correctly, that you know. Again, you're putting forth your legal fiction, your persona, that's not got anything to do with the living, breathing human being.
Well, wouldn't it mean that since you're not presenting yourself, that this person is going to represent you?
Yeah, or you are representing yourself if you're acting pro se.
Yeah, let me give you an example. There's a corral full of sheep, and you walk in there. And you say you're going to act pro se, then you're saying you're going to now present yourself as a sheep. And even though you're a man among sheep, you're still a sheep. Now you're being seen as a sheep because you're representing yourself not as a man, but as a sheep.
And of course, when you hire a lawyer in the first place, they define that as an imbecile.
Well, he's now representing you as a sheep. So when you try to speak, all they hear is baa.
Sure, but doesn't either Blacks or Bouvier's actually define, explain that when you hire a lawyer that you're an imbecile?
Yeah. I mean, that's you're like an idiot. You know?
Right.
You're incompetent to present yourself.
Yeah. And then there's actually a legal term, sui juris. Let me see if I can – I'll pull it up while you guys are talking, which is also a legal term. Which they don't like to hear. And that's actually the only real position that you should have when you go to court. That's the only way that you can stand as a man in court. There is no other way for you to present yourself unless you're going to act basically as a sheep, as an incompetent man who cannot handle his own affairs.
And also by hiring an attorney, you're voluntarily submitting to that jurisdiction, and that's sort of, you know, the point of my whole counterclaim was, you know, prove to me that I was operating in commerce and therefore subject to your jurisdiction in this incident, and they can't prove that because there is no proof, and. You know, that's the interesting thing, and that gets back to that voluntary nature again. You know, we are subject to that if we agree that we are, and we all always do, because we're conditioned to believe that that's the case.
Yeah, so there it is. I just put it in there for you, Jan.
Got it. We'll make sure that all of that gets up on the post for this episode.
So read it, because you have such a nice voice.
And okay, sui juris, one who has all the rights to which a freeman is entitled, one who is not under the power of another, as a slave, a minor, and the like. To make a valid contract, a person must in general be sui juris. Every one of a full age is presumed to be sui juris. So, yeah, that poses a little problem because if they're dumbing everybody down to intentionally fool us, then nobody would be competent to enter a contract. So then all of that consensual stuff that they're using would then be null and void, wouldn't it?
Only if you stand up and say it is.
Yeah.
And then you're no longer incompetent. Then you're sui juris at that point.
Yeah, but see, they don't want to recognize that, and that's... And that's why, I mean, my ultimate goal eventually would be to sue some of these so-called representatives, because they're the source of the fraud.
Yeah,
you know, they're
sure.
The ones writing all of these laws, like the one that I sent you that says that a minor is in fact an adult, right?
Right.
And they're not disclosing the reality of who these statutes apply to. I mean, you can go through the statutes of any state or the United States and see if you can figure out where it says at the beginning of all the statutes who the statutes apply to. They keep it open-ended because they want us to assume that it applies to us. So we need to sue these people to tell them, make your regulations clear so that your servants don't misunderstand it and purposely misapply it to the free people. And that we could probably do with a group big enough and with, you know what, big enough to do it.
Well, the problem is, you know, when you have, a government agency, which is now clearly separate from the people, not by the people or for the people, but very distinctly separate from the people, you know, and their control of the education system, you know, you have teachers of the year like John Taylor Gatto, you know, quitting their position with a op-ed in the New York Times saying, I'm quitting because you won't let me teach these children the way they need to learn. You know, and I think that's, you know, that's the tough part to overcome is, you know, all of us. I mean, I consider myself very lucky to sort of be, you know, I'll say waking up to the realities of the world. You know, I don't know how to move that forward when you're in, you know, in a realm that's so tightly controlled. I mean, they control the education, you know, they dictate what our children are taught and they promote the ignorance because it behooves them. We're all happy little slaves.
So let's go to when you actually were trying to enter your civil action. What happened at that point?
So when I went to the other county to try to actually get my civil action recorded, this is after my arraignment, which had had its whole little own little incidents of weirdness. But so trying to get the civil action entered, they refused to enter it. I went through three or four different clerks, and they wouldn't allow me to enter the paperwork because the paperwork had they have these forms that require you to fill out zip code information, weirdly, in multiple spots. They want to know the zip code where the action arose, and that had all been struck through. And I think even in one instance, we had put this incident did not occur in a zip code, because a zip code is what? It's nothing. It's an idea. It's a fictional overlay. It's not a piece of land or a part of the land. It's just a fabrication that's used for, you know, mail delivery. And that's all. So why they would need any of that information in order to, you know, proceed with a civil action is baffling to me. But you know, as Bert explained, it's something of a trap that they want to get you in. And Bert can probably explain that trap better than I can.
Yeah, basically a zip code, just like a county and all these type of things, are nothing more than a subdivision of a subdivision, and they want you to say that you exist in this fictional subdivision. And of course, in order for you to operate in this fictional subdivision, you have to yourself become something fictional. You know, and that way they can get control over you.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, and then go ahead and go into what happened actually in court when you went to trial for the actual traffic case.
Well, so before that, I you know, again, operating to a large degree in ignorance here, and you know, when you're in the court, you're kind of, you know, left to your own devices, so I did my best to sort of, you know, follow along with all the things that I knew I was supposed to do, but you know, you get nervous in these situations. And so at the arraignment, the traffic referee, as I like to call him instead of a judge, because he's not really a judge.
Actually,
yeah, I said entirely.
I said that he's correct. Actually, his proper name is the traffic referee.
Yeah.
He's not a judge.
Yeah. which is interesting. So, you know, he called my name and I dutifully went up there, and he said, what did he say? He said, so you're charged with going 61 and a 45. And he looked at me pointedly, obviously expecting me to answer. And I just looked back at him. I didn't give him any acknowledgement whatsoever. And after a couple of seconds of trying to sort of stare me down, he said, "So how do you wish to plead on this?" I said, "Well, Your Honor, I'm not here to plead." I said, "I filed some paperwork with the court. Do you have that paperwork?" And he kind of shuffled around and in a frustrated voice said, "Well, I have a lot of paperwork, sir," because of course he had my notice of counterclaim, civil action, and we had also filed a motion to quash, which was an interesting little document, which demanded that the prosecution respond to a bunch of assertions. Again, it's all about challenging jurisdiction.
And the main purpose of the motion to quash is for them to prove standing.
Yes, yes. So, which they couldn't do. So, of course, they didn't respond to any of that. And so, after he said that, he had a bunch of paperwork, I said, I filed a motion to quash specifically. I said, and the prosecution has failed to respond to that motion to quash. I said, and their lack of response is agreement that, is basically a default, an agreement that all of my assertions are correct in that motion to quash. I said, and therefore, based on their lack of response, I would like this matter dismissed. I said, "Have you read the motion to quash?" And he said, "No." And so he took a couple of minutes and actually read through it, which I was kind of surprised he actually bothered to do. And then he said, "Well, motion denied. How would you like to plead?" And I was like, "Well, again, I'm not here to plead. I'm not here to plead. There's nothing to plead. My motion hasn't been responded to." And he said, "Well, if you don't enter a plea, I will enter a plea on your behalf." I said, "Well, I'm not here to plea, and I don't consent to you entering one on my behalf." And he said, "Very well. Plea is entered of not guilty. Your trial date is set for blah, blah, blah." And, after talking to Bert after that situation, Bert had said that he was basically acting as the prosecution illegally by doing that. And again, Bert, you can probably explain that way better than I can.
Well, he kind of is, because he's basically moving the court on his own. Okay? The court's not supposed to self-move unless for something like contempt of court. They need a motion to be moved. But more importantly, he was violating what some people refer to as the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution, your right to remain silent. Right? Everybody says, "Oh, I'll take the Fifth." So if you have the right to remain silent and the judge or the referee asks you a question and then answers it for you, did you even have that right to begin with?
Mm-hmm.
So there's another oxymoron. Mm-hmm. And when dealing with these courts, you're going to find out that everything is an oxymoron.
Mm-hmm.
They say, "Well, you're free to go, sir, but you can't leave." You have the right to remain silent, but you have to answer my questions. how can that be?
Yeah.
But that's how they operate all day long.
Yeah.
But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so then, that whole thing happened, and again, it's all, I'm learning as I go very much, and trying to figure it out. So then, where do we go from there, Bert? So we did the arraignment, and then we had tried to get it filed. So we're filing the counterclaim now because I have a court date set. And again, my hope is to get the counterclaim actually filed, which it hasn't been officially filed yet. It was just a notice of counterclaim that we had filed before. So now we're trying to get the action actually filed. And, again, we've struck out all the zip code information, from the forms that they require. And they won't file. The clerks will not file this paperwork without a zip code, and in the course of conversation with the clerks, I had mentioned that the action did not arise within that county, and they were very insistent that the action could only be heard in court within the county where it occurred, so they would have no jurisdiction to hear my counterclaim in that county, because that's not where the action arose. And I went through, like I said, four or five different clerks, finally got to someone who identified herself as a manager, whatever that means. And again, basically just told me to pack sand. She was like, we're not going to take this paperwork and there's nothing you can do about it. And, you know, I said, well, it's my understanding that this is the Superior Court of the state of California. Is that correct? Yes, sir. That's correct. Well, does not the Superior Court of the state of California have jurisdiction throughout the state? No, sir. They do not. Your action can only be heard in the county where it occurred. So, again, conversations with Bert, and both of us are kind of, you know, flabbergasted and baffled by this. And I made a call subsequently to the Supreme Court of California up in Sacramento, and asked a court clerk there if these assertions, you know, explain my understanding, and if these assertions of the clerks were in fact correct. And she agreed. She said yes, that the cases could only be heard within the counties where the action arose. And Bert was very much against that, and he's got statutes that indicate that very much to the contrary. Bert, where did you find that?
Yeah, I'm trying to pull it up right here. It's it says that the court has process. Oh yeah, here it is. It says the process of superior courts shall extend throughout the state. This is C California. Oh, I forgot what that means. The CCP 71 for California. The process of superior courts shall extend throughout the state. Mm-hmm. If this lady was correct, then it would say the process of superior courts shall extend only throughout the county.
The counties, yeah.
So she's full of BS.
Yeah.
But that's what they do to trick you. And then they told him, what did they tell you about the court clerk?
Oh, yes. I asked specifically, I said, well, does this Superior Court have a court clerk? And the one lady said, well, no, we don't call her that anymore. She's called an executive officer. The court clerk is an old term that's no longer used. So,
you know, right there, it's clear that, you know, what they did was they got rid of the position. So then a referendum needs to be held to reinstill the court clerk, because having a court executive is obviously somebody who is appointed.
Yeah. By the way, your voice is coming in really terrible.
Yeah. You lost a bunch of quality there, Jan.
Yeah.
I'll figure it out here in a second.
But there's actually two big issues with that. The first issue is that if they were calling this lady the court clerk previously, and I know they were, then they were lying. They were improperly calling her the court clerk. If they're now not calling her the court clerk and she is the court clerk, then they're lying.
Yeah.
So they have a problem right now.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling we're going to end up suing at least one court in California.
Uh-huh. And you personally have dealt with this particular court and know, in fact, that there is a court clerk.
Well,
there.
Or at least they didn't deny it previously.
Uh-huh.
But maybe because of the fact that we addressed our paperwork to the court clerk, now uh-huh. they don't want anybody else to do it.
Which nobody does, because nobody knows about
this. Exactly.
Now they're realizing that people are getting wise. And,
yeah, and actually I went back to the website of that particular court, and the name of that court clerk, I cannot find it.
Interesting.
It was listed before, right?
Yeah, it was listed before. Now I don't see it. Okay, so anyway, proceed, sir.
So, yeah, so, you know, we couldn't get the case filed. Now it's getting down to the wire for me. And I'm getting very concerned, because my traffic date is coming up. We haven't got the paperwork filed as we needed to. And I now realize that I have a work conflict with the date of the traffic trial. So I'm starting to sweat a little bit. I'm getting a little worried. And all of this is definitely, you know, trying my patience at this point. But so we go ahead and, you know, Bert in his fantastic way graciously helped me get the paperwork sort of reformatted to file in the actual county where the action arose, and the hope is that then we can get the action moved. But we still really want to get it filed before the date of the traffic trial. So again, the officer has no interest in coming to that case, and it'll be dismissed, and I won't have to worry about the ridiculous $500.
But that wasn't the main point. I mean, that was one of the side effects.
Yes,
that could happen. The main point is that basically you're seeking remedy for being assaulted on the highway.
Correct. But, you know, one thing at a time. First, let's get the traffic matter out of the way, and then deal with the fact that I've, you know, basically been assaulted on the highway, and had money, an attempt to have money extorted basically at gunpoint. Bert, you know, works his butt off and helps me get the paperwork all put together to now attempted to be filed in the county where the action arose, and then we'll hopefully get it moved to the county where the clerk exists, assuming she still exists, and we can actually do that. And this is the day before the traffic trial. Now that we're finally got it together, and we go down to get it filed, and you know, in typical fashion, once again, the way that the paperwork is put together doesn't meet their standard, and they can't accept the paperwork as it stands. And you know, the clerks there were you know, once again helpful. They weren't trying to be jerks, but they were, you know, they weren't going to accept the paperwork as it was. So at this point, I'm out of time, and I don't know what I'm going to do, because I have a conflict with the actual trial that's happening tomorrow. And I had gone down to the court and tried to get the traffic trial moved because of this conflict with work, which I couldn't, you know, I couldn't miss. And they refused. They would not let me move the trial. I said, can I see a judge about this? Is there anything I can do? I can't come to this trial and lose my job because of it. And they, you know, they wouldn't budge an inch. They were basically like, nope, the only thing you can do is hire an attorney to represent you in this matter.
See, this these are the exact same tricks that they did to my friends out here as well.
Yeah, and once again, hiring an attorney, you're basically submitting to their jurisdiction. You're saying, okay, you have authority over me, and how much am I going to pay? that wasn't an option, I basically, you know, was just kind of concerned, but resigned. You know, I got up that next day and was like, well, I'm going to see what the day brings, and we'll see how things go. I'm not going to get bummed out. I'm not going to get worried about it. Maybe I'll have a chance, you know, with my work situation. This particular project was actually going fairly well. So I was, you know, I was going to see if I could maybe try and sneak out for a couple of hours to go deal with this matter. And I was fortunate enough that things actually did go well, and I was able to sneak out, thank goodness, because the way things went were pretty interesting and pretty reaffirming that I, for me at least, that I was pursuing the right course of action with this, and all of my assertions, or at the very least some of them, had some validity. So I get to court, and the judge reads through all the list of cases that are going to be dismissed, rather, because the officers haven't appeared. And I'm hoping that my name is on that list. And of course it's not. So that means the officer's there. So okay, I'm psyching myself up. I'm going to have to actually try and argue this and stick to my guns here, and we'll see what happens. And then, interestingly, instead of proceeding, you know, with actual trials, the judge goes to another list, and I hadn't seen this happen in traffic court before, or maybe I just wasn't paying attention, but he has another list where he says, now I'm going to read off all the cases which have motion changes submitted. So I'm like, motion changes? All right, well, this is interesting. So he reads through all the names, and the officers come up and say, apparently these are the officers that are initiating these motions. And they all come up and have, you know, various reasons. They're you know, I'm moved for this to be dismissed. I don't recall, blah, 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 you know, whatever. They have a bunch of different things. And finally, he calls my name, you know, under this category. And so I stand up, and they don't ask me to come forward. They call out the officer. And the judge says, well, officer, I see you've entered in a motion change here. What would you like to do? And the officer just simply said, I move for this to be dismissed, Your Honor. And the judge says, very well, case dismissed. And that was it. So there was no explanation given, as all of the other officers had done. And he just moved for it to be dismissed and never looked at me. I was standing up, in the crowd of people, so he definitely knew I was there and knew who I was. He never made eye contact with me or anything, and that was it. It was case dismissed. And had I not been able to get out of work and show up, I would have been in default, and they would have assessed an additional, I think, $300 fine. So now my $500 ticket would have been $800, and they would have, suspended my license and put out a bench warrant for me for failure to appear.
Yeah, so explain why it was important for the officer to show up and dismiss the case.
Another thing that we talked about. Again, this is another example of, their trickery that they like to use, and I wasn't prepared for this to happen. I never thought that it would have gone this way, and neither did Bert. He was pretty shocked when I told him the result, that the officer showed up and moved for it to be dismissed himself. I mean,
well, you know what happened there is the officer realized that as long as he was at court, he was getting overtime, so then he just put in an motion to dismiss it.
Definitely, they are compelled to show up, and I know that's frowned upon if they don't. But the thing that Bert pointed out, which I hadn't thought about before, is that by him moving to dismiss the matter, and the judge dismissing the matter, and me not objecting to that, which seems counterintuitive, but me not objecting to that, now also my counterclaim is dismissed.
Oh, so he caught you.
So, yeah, so the whole matter is dismissed. Now, if I had been on my game, I could have said, well, I'll be happy to have these charges against me dismissed, but not my counterclaim. My counterclaim still stands. But because I wasn't savvy enough, I didn't do that. So now, the civil action is going to have to be, I guess I don't even need to say refiled because it was never actually filed. It's going to have to be reworked. So instead of a counterclaim, now it's just a claim against the officer. So that was an interesting bit of trickery, and that's exactly why he did what he did, because in dismissing the ticket, he also dismissed the counterclaim.
You were in there thinking, I just want to get rid of this $500 fine, and he's thinking,
yes,
you know, exactly, let's fool him with that, because otherwise he could stick it to us.
Yes, exactly.
There
Bert,
you go.
Do you have any comments on that?
No, I mean, you said it very well. I mean, that's basically the scenario, but like I said, you know, he's the getting the traffic thing dismissed was a sideline, because basically he expected to go in there, argue the traffic ticket, and lose.
Yeah.
Then he could appeal it, and then he would demand that it be enjoined with his other civil action.
Yeah, those damages would be.
You know, so we were the whole plan that we had was that he was gonna fight it in that traffic court and, you know, lose, and then he was gonna appeal it. So the way it kind of turned out, we actually didn't exactly plan for it that way. But you know, another reason that it probably turned out this way is that most policemen, it depends on the jurisdiction, but some policemen actually have to carry the burden of representing themselves if they find themselves in a situation where they're being challenged as to the validity of their actions. So in some municipalities, the city or the county attorney actually will not protect them. I'm not 100% sure in this particular situation if either the attorney's office was correct or if the court clerk was correct, because you can never believe anything.
Yeah.
It has to be actually written down somewhere, so we would have to research that a little bit to make sure who was telling the truth.
Yeah.
But in a lot of municipalities, when you sue a cop, he actually has to defend himself.
Well, you know, clearly we were on the right track with something, because I can't imagine any other reason for him to handle this the way that he did. If he wasn't concerned that there was validity in my approach, then why would he care to have the case dismissed? That, you know, that should have been an easy $500.
You fell for the red herring. That's all it comes down to. You bought the red herring.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But anyway, but at least he had the outcome of what he wanted in the first step of this process. And then, interestingly, prior to him having this, you know, this action dismissed, he was actually stopped again a second time, and he had an interesting situation happen.
I don't know, you know, I don't know if it's related at all, but it was an interesting anecdote nevertheless. I was stopped again on my way to work. On my route to work, there's a
okay, but let's clarify that this was after you had served the officer.
This was after the notice of counterclaim was filed. Yes, that's correct. So the officer presumably was given a copy of that from the DA's office, which I served them with. So he was aware.
But hold on, you also served a copy to him himself, didn't you mail him a copy?
No, we didn't serve him directly. We only filed the notice of counterclaim with the DA and with the court.
So did you have the paperwork sitting beside you in your car when he pulled you over?
No, I didn't.
You're served.
But so on my way to work, there's this turn that's restricted to certain hours. You can't make this left-hand turn during certain hours. Well, I was on my way to work at a different time from my normal schedule this particular day, and there was, oddly enough, there was a car in front of me, and I was just, you know, I was doing my thing, driving to work. It kind of happens by rote. I barely even think about it while I'm driving to work. It's so second nature at this point. And so I go to make this turn that I make every day because it's outside, you know, it's not in these restricted hours on my normal schedule. And this is further sort of reinforced that this is okay for me, because the car in front of me is also making the same left turn. And there are like 5 signs posted, no left turn during such and such hours. But of course, again, I'm on autopilot, so I don't pay attention to any of that. So the car in front of me makes the turn. I go ahead and make the turn. And sure enough, there's an officer sitting there waiting for the suckers to make this illegal left turn. And he pulls out. I'm a good distance behind the car in front of me. And so he pulls out and obviously lights up the car in front, and I'm thinking, okay, he's looking ahead, he's not going to see me, so I'll just be able to sort of skirt around this and get by. But no, sure enough, as I kind of slowly start to go around him, he pulls out into the road and you know, puts his arm out the window and motions me to pull over. So I do, and of course I get all my stuff, and he gets the paperwork from the other guy, and he comes up to my window and he says, sir, I pulled you over because there's 5 posts. I said, I know. I'm not on my normal schedule, and I was following the guy in front of me, and I'm fully aware that turn is not legal during those times. Here's my paperwork. And so he goes back, and he writes up the first car, you know, in record time, and obviously gives him a ticket and sends him on his way. And he takes a good 10, 15 minutes with my information sitting in the car. And I'm, you know, I'm, of course, again, running late for work. And so I'm sitting there going, okay, what's going on here? He's taking his sweet time with this one. And I'm like, you know, knowing full well that all this stuff is going on and wondering, does he have any idea about this? Is, you know, there's some kind of, you know, code system that I'm like entered into. And, you know, of course, all the scenarios run through your brain. And
he's looking in his database where it says this guy is going to sue you.
Yeah. I certainly hope that's the case. But after about 10 or 15 minutes, he gets out of the car and starts walking to me without his ticket book in his hand. And I'm like, uh-oh. Okay, well, this is either really good or really, really bad. And he walks up and you know, he asked me a couple of questions, pointedly, like, what do you say? Something like, so this isn't your normal schedule. You drive this route. Oh, and the address on my license is from a completely different neighborhood. So he's like, so wait, you live out there, but you're working over here. I said, no. I said, my driver's license address is not correct. It said the correct address is on my other documents, blah, blah. He's like, and this isn't your normal schedule. What is your normal schedule, sir? And so I tell him, you know, and he says, okay, all right, well, you have a nice day. Drive safe. And he hands me back my paperwork, and that was it. So I don't know if the incidents were related. I don't know if he had noticed that it was going to be more trouble than it was worth for him. But I'd certainly like to think that that's the case. But I'm not counting on that because I'm, you know, trying to remove the fallacies from my thinking. So
yeah, it's just an interesting, like you say, an anecdote. So
it's very interesting either way.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's pretty much the end of that situation. So the part A of that situation.
Yes.
We're still moving on with the other matter. But
yes.
But the point here is that this is all nothing more than harassment and trying to get money out of you any way they can.
Yeah.
Now, I want to also qualify this that we're not saying to be unsafe on the highway.
No,
we're
absolutely not
saying to be irresponsible, and we're not saying to be negative toward police officers, because many of these police officers will risk their life to drag you out of a burning car.
Yes,
okay?
Absolutely.
So that's not what we're saying at all. But what we're saying is that by us being such willing sheep, we're actually making their jobs a little bit more difficult. Because if we were to stand up for all these ridiculous things that the cops are being coerced into exercising, we would actually make their job easier. Because enough of them are going to say, okay, enough. I don't want to be giving people tickets for picking their nose, all right? You go give them a ticket. That's not our job. We're here to maintain the peace and to protect people. That's what our job is really supposed to be. Not to harass people for picking their nose in traffic.
And have ticket quotas and all that nonsense.
Yeah, all this kind of stupid stuff. I mean, I have friends that are policemen, and they're like, man, I hate giving people tickets, is what they tell me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But
for the most part, again, it's got nothing to do with safety. It's the same thing with parking tickets. You know, all these statutes and laws are supposed to be to keep people safe. And, you know, how do these parking ticket situations, how is that anybody, you know, going to be any harm from any of these situations? It's in most instances, I believe it's simply just revenue generation.
Yeah, it's it's like I asked Robert. I said, you know, Bob, now that you are more, you know, involved in the situation, isn't your exercise of your natural right on the highway kind of like more open in front of you? Aren't you more aware of what you are doing on the road?
Yeah.
And it's actually true, ain't it? You become more aware of your actions and you actually become more responsible.
Yeah.
Not that
absolutely.
You weren't responsible before, I'm just saying you just become more aware.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so standing up for your rights actually makes you more aware of other people's rights, which is what's funny when you go down this road, because someone may get upset or upset you on the road. Oh, they're cutting me off. And you think, well, you know, they have the right to use the road just like I do. And he didn't do it on purpose, although I'd like to get him. But now it's okay. It's okay. He has the same right like I do. And you slow down. You give people a break. And you just become a better man or woman on the road or in your everyday life and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely pay more attention, that's for sure.
Yeah, you may pay more attention to details when you actually exercise your rights. And what I would like people to do is say if they all start standing up for at least one of their rights in their whole lifetime, okay, changes will come about. And I'm telling you, policemen have a huge burden in their hands because they want these guys to become nothing but revenue collectors.
Mm-hmm.
And they hate it. Okay, now some of those guys, of course, are you know, jarheads, and they enjoy beating and abusing people, but that's pretty much in any situation. But by us being sheep, we're making it difficult for the good officers to stand up and act like good officers.
Well, back to your point about responsibility, you know, it's interesting that you know, California Vehicle Code whatever it is, the number that you're written up for speeding. The fact that, you know, I think anybody that you talk to would say, well, what do you think that code actually says? They would say, well, speeding is defined as, you know, driving outside the posted speed limit. But that's not what it says at all. It doesn't say that at all. It says you can drive as fast as conditions permit, up to the maximum speed limit in the state, which in California is 75 miles an hour. There are several sections of highway that you can actually, it's posted, 75 miles an hour. And you know, what happens by us giving up, our own responsibility and allowing the officer to determine whether or not our speed is safe, we're not standing on our own. If I stand on my own and I say I'm responsible for my driving, I drive, I operate my vehicle every day, and I'm responsible for that. And I'm not going to give that responsibility away to anybody else. And so I get to determine whether or not I'm operating this vehicle safely. And in my mind, I'm always operating this vehicle safely because I don't want to have an accident. I don't want to injure somebody. I've got there's no reason for me to operate that unsafely. And that statute is very telling that it doesn't, spell out that specific, speeding is defined as, driving over the posted speed limit. That's not what it says at all.
But to clarify, that statute is still only referring to commercial vehicles.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, that has nothing to do with you conducting yourself in the use of the highway.
Right, but and that's my point, though. By agreeing to those statutes applying, we're surrendering our personal responsibility and handing that over to the courts and law enforcement.
Exactly. So
I don't think that's something that, if we think about it, any of us really want to do.
Exactly. So I hope this was enlightening to the folks. Anything else you want to add there, Jan?
Well, why don't we go with the typical closure here? Bob, why don't you start off by telling the audience, what do you think is the most important thing they should take away from this interview?
Well, for me, it really was hit home about, the fact that it seems this has proven, at least in my mind, that, all of this stuff is voluntary and we have a choice. We can either assume responsibility for ourselves and stand up as men and women and take full responsibility for our actions every day. And all of the consequences that come with that, as I have in this matter, or we can submit to these sort of traps that are laid for us and take away our personal responsibility and give it to the powers that be. And I know for myself, I won't be pursuing that course of action anymore. And I would hope other people can learn and try and apply some of this and have their own success and put it to the test. As Bert has said, a traffic ticket is the perfect way to sort of what do we say,
get
Bert?
Your
freedom muscles.
Yeah, because like you.
Go ahead.
Hold on. Yeah, because like you said that your muscles were a little atrophied.
Because I've never used it before.
I remember when I was in high school or early college, there was this kid that I went to school with, and he had become one of these junior cops, and then he became a real police officer. And I lived in this cul-de-sac, and he took it upon himself to go by my house three times a day when I'd be in and out, buzzing, going back and forth to work and stuff, and I'd just park in front of my place real quick, run in, grab something, run back out. So he's watching my place, and then I run in for a minute, and apparently he turned around to come back and give me a ticket, and I had taken off again. And so, he files all these tickets with the court, and I had like five or six tickets from this one guy. So finally, my neighbor and I took him to court, and we claimed that he was harassing me. And the judge threw out all of the tickets together. So my
first taste of dealing with trying to fight a ticket was that I won. So, you know, I mean, we went in and we, you know, filed a counterclaim or whatever that it was harassment, and I didn't even realize what I was doing at the time. But we did actually win and had, you know, six tickets thrown out. They were all just parking tickets. But, you know, still, it always gave me the idea that you can stand up and win is the point of it all anyway.
Yeah, and I want to redefine win because, okay, like, Bob just had his, you know, that action from the policeman dismissed, and you had that one dismissed. You really didn't really win anything. You just simply had it dismissed.
Sure, you kept your freedom and you kept them from imposing themselves on you as well.
Yeah, but the imposition, the harm, the time that they took away from you, you still haven't been compensated for that.
Sure, right.
I can tell you the time that both Bert and I have spent and the legwork and the running around and all of that, you know, I definitely had a few moments during this whole process where I was like, is this really worth it? Because it was very frustrating, and the obfuscation and you know the whole way that they try to deny us you know proper access to the legal system, you know,
sure,
they don't make it easy for you, man. They don't want you doing what I've done.
And not only that, but the time you invest was probably more than the $500. But now what you've done is you've created something that can empower so many others. So in that sense, it's of course well worth it.
Well, and that's what I told Bert is, you know, the even if I had you know had to pay for the ticket, you know, and frankly, even if the civil case, you know, doesn't go my way, you know, the lessons that I've learned and the direct observation that I've gotten of the sort of corruption in the system and all the nonsense involved in it, you know, I can't put a price on that. I've learned more than I ever thought to during this whole process. And I got to say, if you guys are in trouble, you need some help, talk to Bert because he was great. He held my hand through all this and walked me through it and kept my spirits up. I couldn't have done it without him. So thank you, okay, Bert.
Well, you're welcome. But, you know, like I always tell people, whatever good or bad, you know, you have to take the full responsibility, and your success is always going to depend on the amount of effort and time that you put into it. Because like Bob just said, at any moment, he could have thrown in the towel, you know, but he didn't.
He stuck with it.
Yeah.
And Bert, what's your takeaway, or was that it?
Well, it's just mainly, just like he said, you know, stand up for your rights. If you even stand up for one of your rights in your whole lifetime, that would be huge. Just once, because every single man or woman that I've spoken to that stood up for their rights once learned a huge amount in the process, and they learned that, yeah, they don't make it easy for you, but if you persist, you will eventually get some sort of justice.
Yeah. Indeed. So,
That's the message.
All right.
Ready?
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Anyway.
That's good.
All right.
All right, guys. I got to get going.
Enjoy
your
day.
Thank you so much.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, oh, tell me, heaven is under the earth.
Get up, stand up for your right.
But different.